I'm Indy Todd. Welcome to The Point. Today, a conversation on teenage radio diaries revisited. And later in the hour, we sit down with comedian Paula Poundstone. Beginning in 1996, independent producer Joe Richmond gave a group of teenagers from around the country tape recorders to create audio diaries about their lives. The intimate portraits of these teens aired on NPR's All Things Considered and helped launch the trend of first-person narratives on public radio. Over the past year, Joe Richmond has reconnected with five of the original teenage diarists who are now in their 30s to produce a new series of stories called Teenage Diaries Revisited. Joe Richmond joins us in the studio today to discuss the new series, and later we'll be joined by Melissa Rodriguez, one of the original teen diarists who helped inspire the creation of Teenage Diaries Revisited. Welcome to the program, Joe.
Thanks, Mindy. It's good to be here.
So let's rewind 16 years ago to the first round of radio diaries. What was the inspiration for the project?
Oh, there were a lot of inspirations. I mean, one of the inspirations is the guy who helped to start this radio station right here, Jay Allison. I mean, there were examples of, in TV of working with sort of video diaries, and there were some people doing it, handing over tape recorders in radio like Jay. For me, it was just, the original idea was, and it was something sort of along the lines of the 7-Up series too, and you're familiar with that, of just checking in with people over time. And, teenagers, I think there was something about teenagers that worked well. They're kind of like in this moment of figuring out things, mm-hmm. and where are they going? And most important, there was something about radio that worked really well. I think more than, say, a video diary, there was something great about the turning the microphone on yourself. Mm-hmm. It really takes advantage of the medium in this way, the intimacy and the kind of connection you can have from once you take out the middleman and go right from the character to the listener.
It's powerful, very powerful. So how did you find the subjects?
All different ways. I mean, back in 1996, we were, we stumbled on some. We were looking sort of for particular stories. Juan was an illegal immigrant who had just come over the border and was living in Laredo, Texas. And I was looking for that kind of a story. And so, that was just sort of like any reporter does. You make a lot of calls and try to find someone who fits the... so he was one of the diaries. Others just kind of, I don't know.
Somehow they just fall.
They find you, don't they? They find you.
So we're going to play a clip, which is a montage of the teenage diarists.
Hello? Nope, wrong button. There. Hello?
Oh, let me do the introduction now. Hi, my name is Josh. If you saw me on the street, you wouldn't notice anything different about me.
My name is Amanda, and I guess in a way I always known that I was bisexual.
People always used to pick on me all the time, Then one day I decided to play football.
I'm Mexican and I'm here in the U.S. It's like kind of amazing.
I didn't think I was going to get pregnant. It just happened.
It's my radio show, thank you.
So you handed them tape recorders, and then what? What were the instructions?
Originally it's like there weren't many instructions. You give them kind of like the technical stuff, but you just sort of turn them loose. And there was this – back then, I remember one of the lessons I learned early on was you just have to get past this point where they're no longer performing. They sort of get bored with the whole thing, mm-hmm. and that's when a lot of the great material was starting to happen. So really it's kind of like a time thing,
Right.
Give them the tape recorder with enough time that sort of amazing things can happen, and also the sort of mundane, real quality of their lives can happen too.
Yeah. So the final product that we heard on the Radio Diary series was a 10 to 12 minute story. But I imagine as you're speaking to, there was hours of tape. So listening to hours of these kids' lives must have given you a special connection to them. How did that impact your role as a producer? And how did you, decide what to pull from all those hours?
I don't know. I mean, people describe that process sort of like a sculpture. You're just trying to like chisel away at everything that doesn't belong until you're left with something. I don't know. The structure stuff, trying to make a life into a story is, I don't know. Every time it feels like a whole, like the first time really.
Yeah.
But I don't know. With those stories, they were teenagers. I was a lot younger too. And revisiting these stories 16, 17 years later, they are the age that I was when I was working with them.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of things have changed. They no longer have all the time they had as a teenager mm-hmm. to just record endlessly. And they're busy, and I'm busy.
So less tape to go through.
So it was a really different kind of experience yeah. working with yeah. them then and now.
Yeah. So what did you hope to accomplish with the stories? And did it turn out similarly or differently to what you had originally had in mind?
Actually, you know, when we first thought about doing this series, and the idea came with Melissa, which I can talk about in a moment. We'll meet her in a minute. But, you know, originally they were just going to be check-ins, sort of where are these people 16 years later? And because of the stories we chose, because of the time that they took to do their diaries, they all became, you know, we imagined these as like 3-minute stories. They ended up being between 13 and 21 minute stories on the mm-hmm. air. So they all became more elaborate. And, you know, it's like part of the great thing about working this way is the sort of surprise aspect, you know, mm-hmm. the unpredictability. You never know exactly what's going to happen when you give someone a tape recorder. And that was what happened in their lives, too. Mm-hmm. You didn't know what would happen when they were 16, 17. And then you check back much later, and their lives took very different turns from where mm-hmm. I thought, where they thought they might end up.
Yeah, I suppose that's true for anyone if you think back what you were doing 16 years ago and compare what's happened in that time frame. So what kind of reaction did you get from listeners the first time around?
Well, I think back then it sounded so different from anything else that was on the air on NPR right. for the most part. So there was a great reaction. It, you know, I think it's still people at NPR consider it, you know, sort of a seminal mm-hmm. series then. And it just, you know, to hear next to the news of whatever Afghanistan and the debt mm-hmm. debate, you know, to hear these people kind of telling their own story directly to you, I think sounded really different. We're at a different time now.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's what's probably a different reaction.
And I think it is a different, you know, we're used to people revealing their lives right. and to confessing and to, like, you know, so it's a bit of a different culture now. And so I think in that way it didn't kind of shock in the same mm-hmm. way. On the other hand, like, we're also used to hearing the kind of the stories we want to hear and the ones we know. And I think there's still something so powerful about mixing it up in the news to mm-hmm. hear someone tell their story. But we're going to hear from Melissa about
right.
being a single mom and just surviving life.
So, as mentioned, you recently decided to reconnect with some of the original teen diarists and produce this series called Teenage Diaries Revisited. Where did the idea to revisit this original radio diaries come from?
Well, it came really from Melissa. I mean, what happened, you know, I had been in touch, you know, originally from the 1996 series, there were maybe 12 to 15 diarists. And many of them I've been in touch with over the years, some very closely, some, you know, every year. Melissa, I had totally lost touch with. And actually, a lot of people in her life had lost touch with her. She kind of disappeared at one point. And I thought things were going to turn out that well for her. She was, you know, she had had a really hard life, and she had a young kid, and she was on her own. And anyway, about 10 years later, out of the blue, I got an email from her. Said, you know, I hope you still remember me. We did a story, da da da. Just wanted to let you know things turned out okay.
And you're like, we have to follow up.
And I got back in touch with her, and we talked for a while. And a little bit while after that, I said, hey, would you like to do another story? And that led to following up with other diarists. Mm-hmm. You know, Juan, who I mentioned, the illegal immigrant, he's still undocumented mm-hmm. 16 years later, even mm-hmm. though he has this amazingly wonderful kind of middle class American dream life with mm-hmm. kids and a house and everything. And the other stories, the football star Frankie had gotten in trouble with crystal meth. And, you know, mm-hmm. you don't know where lives go. Right. And we found surprises with all of them.
So we have another clip. This is another montage of the diarists, but now we're hearing them as adults.
If you meet me on the street, it's not even going to cross your mind that I'm an illegal resident. I've been here for so long. I'm one of you.
Well, I went from being on the front page of football, representing my little bitty school, been on the front page of a thief and a meth head.
That's you. That's a baby.
Do you still think it's a phase? Well, we know it's not a phase.
For everybody who's listening out there, I mean, is your life the same today as it was 16 years ago?
That's a lot of years. It's a lot of months. It's a lot of days. It's a lot of issues going through it. But then once you're done with them, 16 years later, you look at it, you're like, where did those 16 years go?
So what were your instructions this time around? We mentioned they don't have as much time on their hands. So was it different?
It was different. You know, yeah, they didn't have as much time. And I think when you're a teenager, there's a sense that everything you say is important. And somehow we lose that along right. the way, you know. And so But, you know, I still, for the most part, I had a relationship with them that seemed, you know, that continued. And they were all game mm-hmm. to, you know, record very intimate, sometimes very tough things. And mostly it was just record as much as you can.
We're talking with Joe Richman, who has reconnected with five of the original teenage diarists, who are now in their 30s, to produce a new series of stories called Teenage Diaries Revisited. Joe, what were some of the biggest surprises for you as you revisited these lives of these five who were once teenagers and now in their 30s?
I mean, you know, part of it is like you, when you're a teenager, there's so much unknown and so much promise, and like you, when you check back with people 16 years ago, you know, you never know. So, you know, the biggest surprise was probably with Frankie, with being a high school football star and kind of getting involved with drugs. But there are littler surprises too. Oh, the very first diarist that we did in 1996 was Amanda, who was sort of coming out to her parents, who were having a really hard time with it, Catholic, conservative, and just, you know, really having a hard time with it. She went back to interview her parents again, you know, and everything's changed. Mm-hmm. You know, the world has changed. She has changed. Her parents have changed. And, you know, it's not a surprise, but to hear the difference between the conversation she had with her parents then and now, right. it kind of charts something.
You know, in a lot of ways, not just Amanda, but Melissa, a lot of these, when they were teenagers doing this, they were really brave to, you know, embrace this idea and share these really private, sometimes what might be considered controversial choices.
Yeah, incredibly brave. And I think in a way, even more brave now to do it again. Yeah, their game.
Yeah.
And it is amazing. And I don't know if we could do it.
Yeah. I know I asked you about listener reaction, but did you have listeners reach out to you? I'm sure they reached out to some of the diarists, but reach out to you and say, wow, that was great, or what are you thinking?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think these stories, you know, it is so different from the stuff you hear on All Things Considered, you know, on the daily stream of news. And I think it... some people will love it. Some people, it can be polarizing. Some people are like, I want my House representatives debate back. But I think, you know, the main thing is like something about taking the mediator away, the host, the reporter away, and letting these people, it's like putting them in the passenger seat when people are stuck in traffic on their way home and having them talk directly. I think that's, you know, it's unlike anything else. And mm-hmm. I think the goal, and I think when it's successful, it happens, is it's people really get to know them.
Right. And yeah, and talk about driveway moment. You can't get out of the car when that's happening.
Yeah, and, you know, there's this thing about like a stranger, someone who you don't know their story.
Right.
And I think that's like once, you know, you have someone for 13, 20 minutes telling their story, and all of a sudden it feels like you get to know them.
Mm. So did the diarists help with editing or creating the stories that aired on NPR, or was that pretty much your job?
All the editing they know what's going in there. So we kind of talk about, you know, what the important plot points are and what the kind of narrative structure. We do a little bit of that. But for the most part, it's, you know, originally when I started the series, I thought it would be kind of a collaborative production process. That was like quickly revealed as a silly idea. But they know everything that's going in the story. And in a way, it's a very different model from, say, them being the subject and I am the reporter. They're the reporter and I'm the producer, and that means that, for example, I give them editorial control in a way that you wouldn't in a traditional story.
Mm. What about, we know how the diarists sort of reacted to hearing themselves 16 years later. What about the other players, the kids, the families, you know, some of the kids obviously who weren't around yet or barely around in Melissa's case. What did they all react similarly?
Yeah, you know, I mean, that was a small revelation back then, 16 years ago, what a big role the parents played in the background, but actually in the stories themselves. Like the real poignant moments often were conversations between kids and parents. And that, as I said, was true with these new stories, conversations with the parents again or with their kids. And we did an event when the series was being broadcast, and All Things Considered, we did an event at BAM in Brooklyn, hosted by Ira Glass. And at the end, we didn't just do a Q&A with the diarists that came up, but we brought their parents.
Oh, nice.
Or their kids up too. And it was so interesting. It was like a kind of an electric moment to see the parents there too, you know. Yeah. And part of it is the lineage of these stories, you know, following these people over such a period of time.
Yeah. Now, talk about the other diaries that you, radio diaries, the series itself. I mean, there's obviously so many stories out there. How do you choose? Where does your inspiration come from for these?
Well, we do a lot of historical documentaries with a lot of archival tape and that sort of thing. But the diaries that we do, giving to people tape recorders, you know, it's all, you know, we often work with young people. You know, there are reasons that kind of it works well with young people, having a lot of time, having a lot of kind of like hubris about what they think about the world and everything else. But we've done it, you know, that we did a diary in a retirement home as well years ago. And, you know, I guess the most recent one that we did before the Teenage Diaries series was about this young boxer who ended up winning the gold medal in the Olympics, this Clarissa Shields, this young teenage. It was the first year that women were boxing in the Olympics, and she went on to win the gold medal. And that just that story came about because my wife was photographing her.
I remember that story. It was like, how did they find her before, you know, to be able to do that?
And we got, lucky. We got lucky kind of like picking someone who ended up winning the gold medal. But, all these stories are getting lucky. It is like you plant a tape recorder there, you pick someone who has something, and you just kind of wait for things to happen.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, any kind of documentary work is a little bit of that, just sort of putting yourself in a position to get lucky.
Right. So do you foresee somewhere down the line that there'll be a part three to this, or is this it?
I would have said definitely no while we were producing these stories. And once they aired, I would say definitely yes. And Josh, who has Tourette syndrome, he was one of the diarists, and he did another diary. And he's already recording for his, what's it going to be, 50 to whatever he's going to be. He's already starting.
All right. So as we mentioned, Melissa Rodriguez, one of the original diarists, and we have a clip from her as a teenager.
Okay, let's see what old songs I have here. Oh, yeah, this is a classic.
Hi, I'm going to introduce myself. My name is Melissa Rodriguez. My friends call me Missy.
I'm 8 months pregnant, 8 and a half. It's a boy. Everybody asks me, what are you going to name him? What are you going to name him? I don't even know what I'm going to name him. I mean, I tried everything. I even called the psychic line. Talk about crazy. I called the psychic line. I was like, can you see who it is? They didn't even know. And they psychic. This is my plan, to have the baby. And I think when I look at the baby, I think I will know.
That was Melissa Rodriguez, who now joins us on the telephone. Good morning, Melissa. Tell us a little bit more about your life when you recorded your first diary.
My life on the first diary, I guess I could say I was a normal teenager. I was in high school. I actually was in a residential home, you know, for children that do not have parents. So I basically grew up with the staff, and I was just young. I learned my way of living by just friends, families, and a lot of residential staff.
Yeah. How did Melissa come on your radar screen, Joe? Do you remember for the first diary?
Yeah, she came through a friend of a friend who was. Hi, Melissa.
Hi, Joe.
Would you call Rachel like your kind of like social worker, or I'm not sure what you call her, but yeah. And so she introduced me to Melissa, and this is before when Melissa was pregnant, kind of have her baby, and we said, you know, record the process leading up to and after having your baby, and you know at that point, you know, Melissa, what you didn't say is like how many group homes and residential facilities had you been through at that point when I met you. A lot.
Yeah, I lost count with the numbers, but I'm sure there were like in the teens.
Oh,
yeah.
So describe the experience of recording yourself. Did you feel comfortable bringing that tape recorder around with you and talking into it? I mean, would that take some time to get used to?
It took some time to get used to. You know, they're extremely large back then, so they weren't easy to hide into any pocketbook. So. There was just, you know, everyone can see it wherever I had it. It was a big microphone and a very large tape recorder.
Yeah, so you weren't
hiding. It was very hard to get used to. I got a lot of awkward looks. People were curious. So yeah. it was hard in the beginning, but it became easy as the time went.
And so how did you feel about making something so personal public? As Joe was saying earlier, a lot of people do that now. But back then, it wasn't common for people to make these really personal, experiences so public.
to be honest with you, I had no idea a lot of people were going to listen to it. At the time of recording it, you know, I understood I was recording it and people were going to hear it. But I thought a very small group of people, maybe the city that I lived in was going to hear it, or a city far away was going to hear it, but not national.
Right.
Not at all.
Yeah.
Not at all.
So fast forward now to the present. What made you reach out to Joe over that email after so many years had passed?
You know, doing the first recording with Joe, it was just a large impact in my life. And Joe became a friend while the recording process was happening. You know, he learned a lot of intimate information about my life. And we just had a friendship that was hard to forget.
Mm-hmm.
He really put a side of my life after the first recording. And, you know, he was just one of those people that you just is definitely unforgivable.
Yeah.
Forgettable.
What was it like to hear your diary 16 years later?
It was extremely weird, actually. I'm an easier talker than I am a listener. So when I listened to it, it was almost like, wow, is that me? I felt like, wow, what a different person that I've become. You know, I was young then, and now, you know, at 35, I couldn't believe how immature I thought back then. So it was different.
Yeah, we have a clip from your teenage diary that you listened to with your son in your story for Teenage Diaries Revisited. We'll take a listen.
Okay.
Today is October the 9th, and I have a brand new baby boy, 7 pounds. His name is Isaiah Seto, and he was born at 1:30, right?
1:17,
exactly.
He was born an hour ago.
I was watching, 1:17.
And we would have recorded the birth, but it happened so fast.
About half an hour.
You know, so I'm sorry you couldn't hear all the pain, but it was easy.
Adorable.
I can't believe this whole thing was inside of me.
Congratulations, Missy.
Thank you.
Sorry, so you listened to this with your son for the new series, the Teenage Diaries Revisited. What was that like?
That was, for him, it was, you know, to me, I didn't know what his, you know, how he was going to react with the recording. But once he heard it, he didn't even believe it was me. He was like, who's that baby? And I informed him. I said, you know, that's you right there. That's you being born. That's you as a baby. And he basically laughed it off. I don't think to this day, you know, now he knows it's him. Mm-hmm. But listening to it with him, I thought it was a beautiful thing. You know, 15 years later, and it just flies. It just goes by so fast.
Sure does. Yeah.
I know the recording of you playing that for him, and I know that he just laughed and laughed and laughed.
He just laughed it off.
So what was the experience of recording the audio diaries the second time around? Like, I imagine it was different as adult than it was as a teenager.
I'm sorry?
Yeah, the second time around. It was different than the first time as recording it, right? What was the experience?
Oh, it definitely was. My first one, you know, I had so much time in my hand to do the recording. So I think I record everything except for me just breathing. And sometimes I just sat. But the second one, you know, I became a working mother, you know, and being a parent, you have so much to do. You have 24 hours. You still have to get sleep in there. So the recording, it was almost, I can only catch it when I remember the tape recorder. So the first time was definitely easier. The second time, it was, you had to think about it.
Yeah.
The first time I didn't think about it at all.
Yeah,
you asked, you know, what makes a good diarist, and the fact that Melissa at 18 took the tape recorder into the hospital while she was having birth is one criteria.
Yeah.
But even in the new diary, Melissa worked at a call center, and she brought the tape recorder there and recorded that process. And still, like, she just recorded not just, you know, a lot of wonderful scenes and some very intimate moments, too.
And we're going to hear one from the new series and set this up. What are we listening to? What are we going to listen to?
Is it the one?
The Treading Water one.
Okay. Yeah. So this is actually, this is just the very end of her story, just sort of a final thought. And one of the things that I love about it is, you know, I mean, endings are hard, you know, especially when you're recording someone's life. How do you find an ending to a life that, of course, is just, you know, moving on? And, you know, sometimes you look for anecdotes or images or just a beautiful thing that someone says, and this kind of did it all. And this is the ending of Melissa's story.
One of the homes I was in, they used to send us to this summer camp, Camp Squanto. I just remember the orange Indian t-shirt I used to wear on the top of my bathing suit. And just wanted to make sure you were a good swimmer. And for the test, we had to tread water. You just treaded water until you just couldn't tread water no more. And I remember it was about 12 of us. You see one by one, you see one person tread for 5 minutes. Next person, 10 minutes, 20 minutes. And I think at 35 minutes, the last three people were there. And they were struggling. And this boy was looking at me like, this girl's still treading. And he gave up. I treaded for almost an hour and a half that day. And I would have kept treading, but they told me to stop. It was probably one of the happiest days of my life. I never thought about it before, but my whole life is treading water. You know? You have no support under your feet. You have no support over your head. You can't hold on to nothing. You're just out there. Keep it moving.
Powerful stuff. Joe, what were some of the biggest surprises that you came across? I know Melissa's story isn't the only powerful one in this series of The Diaries Revisited.
Yeah, I mean Melissa's story, part of the surprise was being in touch with her and finding out sort of why she did kind of disappear, and that's sort of reflected in her diary, having to do with her son and some the medical diagnosis that he got when he was younger. You know, Frankie being this like all-American football, high school football star, and getting involved with crystal meth, you know, mm-hmm. it's part of that story is like, you know, it can happen to anyone, and mm-hmm. sort of it's about second chances. Juan, as I mentioned before, he just has this like perfectly wonderful American life now, even though he's still undocumented. Mm-hmm. And I guess, you know, back when they were teenagers, a lot of the important scenes happened between the teenagers and their parents. And now some of the important scenes, like in Melissa's story and in Juan's story, are the conversations between the diarists in their 30s and their kids.
The kids, yeah. So you're going to be giving a talk on August 22nd at the Wellfleet Preservation Hall, and Melissa will be joining you. We'll put the details up on our website, capeandislands.org, and link yours for folks who might want to know more about the series.
Yeah, they can hear Melissa's full story and whatever, yeah.
Melissa Rodriguez. Melissa, thanks for joining us, and thanks for sharing your story with the world.
I hope everybody likes it.
Yeah. Joe Richman, thank you, and keep up the good work. We love your diaries. They're
Mandy.
Amazing.
It's great to be here.